This week on the Ocean Cruisers podcast, I'm having a chat with David Shee. David was cruising around the USA living van life when him and his wife decided to buy a boat. They chose to go with the Lagoon 450, unfortunately with a victim of the bulkhead and structural beam situation. David decided to take the boat to Panama to meet up with his friend, who was also fixing up the same boat that had the same issues. He then spent over a year on the hard in Panama, rebuilding his boat back to a safe standard, and probably now sails the strongest lagoon ever built. We also did a recording with David for the Admiralty Show, talking in more detail about the rebuild, so check that out on YouTube if you want to know more. If you want to follow David's journey, check out his YouTube channel, David Shee. If you want to watch these interviews in full, join the Ocean Cruisers Patreon community and follow us on Instagram and Facebook to keep up to date. Enjoy the chat.
When did you actually want to start cruising? Like, when did the bug bite you, and when did you want to get out there and start making things happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did van life well before we even thought about boat life.
Cool.
So like boat life wasn't a thing. I didn't know it existed, you know? And yeah, so we bought the van that I'm talking about, a Ford Transit in 2018-ish, something like that, about 5 years ago, 2017, 2018. And I was like, I'm going to convert it and we're going to live in it, but we still have our jobs. So like I converted it with plywood. We've done it now 3 or 4 times. Okay, as we've gotten new kids, you know, different needs, we've changed the inside of the van. We would never quit our jobs. We were too scared to like actually dive in and van life like all these other people do. So we kept our jobs and we would van life on the weekends or in long holidays or just whenever we could. Eventually, I quit. Mary was still working. So she would fly out to different places that we would drive to. I'd just be taking like 2 kids at the time and then 3 kids. And anyway, it was on one of these long van trips on the coast of California, where we had been gone maybe like a month and a half, right in the beginning of COVID. So she was actually able to come with us because she was working from home. And it's so hard being in a van with 5 people, all right? Like you're on top of each other. You see couples in vans, it's easy, right? They're just hanging out. They have like a sitting area. They have like a bathroom built in. They have a bed. They have a couch. And then they can swivel the front seats. It's so much room. But with 3 kids, you're literally sleeping on top of each other.
You're pushing the bars a bit there.
Yeah. So we, from the back of the van, we've got a bed, right? A bed that goes across. It's up high. And then directly in front of it, we've got seats on the driver's side. And then on the passenger side, we've got like a little kitchen, you know, with a sink and all that stuff. We're hiding the fridge under the bed. We've got a little cassette toilet that's kind of tucked away. Anyways, I've got the factory seats because I'm paranoid about crashing and then the kids go flying. People make their own seats and seatbelts, but I left factory seats. On top of that, I built a platform. So we've got a climbing crash pad. That's their bed. So we got 2 kids sleeping above there, me and Mary sleeping on the bed, another kid sleeping on the like aisleway, and 1 kid sleeping with us. It's crazy. My point is, we're suffering, okay? We're like looking for water every day because it's a tiny 20-gallon tank. We're like going to gas stations, finding water, trying to find charge, like place to charge the batteries. And that's when we decided, okay, I love this lifestyle. When we go home, Mary and I, you know, I was like, when we go home, let's sell everything, build our dream van, and live in it. That was the beginning, okay? At that point, we had already seen some sailing videos here and there where I saw the winds and definitely saw Parlay. And we're like, that's crazy. That's amazing. We're like one day. It's a one day thing 10 years from now. And that's all we knew of it. So we come home and we're like, I'm looking for vans. I need a van that's 2 feet bigger or 2 feet longer and 1 foot higher. I can build like a double bunk. And we're watching our normal like sailing videos and we're watching Parlay. And she's like, why would you want a van life when you can boat life? And I was like, money. Like, do you know how expensive these boats are? I saw some small catamaran. I don't remember what it's called, but it was like a 35 footer. And I want to say it was like 150 grand. You know, they were just so randomly expensive. Marketing it. Yeah. But that was like, or maybe it was 100, but it was really, really cheap. At the time, I had no idea that you had to outfit the boats and like boats could cost like twice as much after you're done with them. But that made me feel like it was possible. And also a 35 foot catamaran would never work for a family of 6 because she was pregnant at the time. We're about to have the 4th kid. It was never going to work. Like unless we were going to have no toys and nothing aboard except for the people, you know? So, but that got us thinking, and we started researching, and we're like, we got stuck on it, and we believed it could happen. And then that's when we started selling all of our stuff, and slowly we're transitioning like to having a little bit more money, and we're still looking at boats. And then we realized like a 35, 34 foot catamaran will never work. We're never going to be able to fit like a compressor on there and a generator and all that stuff. So then we started, you know, then we started migrating towards like these lagoons that are a little bit bigger. And eventually we sold all of our stuff on Facebook Marketplace. Anything that was like 20 bucks or more. I mean, I had a spreadsheet of like 400 line items, I want to say. And we sold everything. Oh, nice. So we had, yeah, we had a Tesla Model X. That was the first thing we sold. I went from like the most and easiest, most money and most easy to sell to, you know, down to just nothing, just like anything. I just go look for picture frames, put them in a pack, take pictures all different ways around. And then I post it and we sell those picture frames for like $15. I didn't care. I was going to sell everything. We probably sold like 20 to 40 grand worth of stuff that was just sitting around the house. I'm not talking
just like random
cars,
stuff,
just random crap that we had, like tables and like TV mounts and anything, like old speakers, nice, right? You know, yeah, old computers, laptops. I mean, whatever. You know, we're a pack rat.
Oh, so. Man, I thought I was doing good. I've got a. I'm probably in the $500 to $600 range.
No. Keep on going. I mean, all that. I'm looking I'm looking at your walls right now. You got stuff to sell. That light right there. You could sell that for $25. I'm serious. That painting right there. That's a really nice painting. That could go. I don't know, man. Maybe
pass it off as a Monet, perhaps. Yeah.
No, but my point is, I didn't care. You get really anal about stuff selling. I don't want to meet people. They have to come to me. I did not care. I drove around everywhere, all over Houston, even in Texas. And I met people to sell stuff. Like I would meet 10, 15 people a day. And I didn't care. I just sold everything we could.
Yeah, that's
and
then really we, all good,
of a mate. All of a sudden, we had enough money to buy a boat. And we started looking. And we settled on a Lagoon 450. Because that's the boat I watched growing up in this whole like sail boat life thing, you know, it was going to be a Leopard 40. What do the winds have? Like a Leopard 44. I can't remember now, but with the steps in the front, I looked at those steps and I loved them. Like I have to have that. Now looking back, those are the ugliest steps ever on the front.
They're
of the
a weird design choice, aren't they?
Yeah. They're horrible. And that boat is tiny. That boat would never work for us, but it didn't matter. Like that's what I saw online. I saw that and I saw the 450 and that's what we had to get. And we started hunting for 450s and we finally found one. But that's how we got into this whole world of boat life, watching YouTube videos, becoming obsessed, deciding van life was the life for us. Coming back, Mary was like, no, boat life, we can do it. I was like, not a chance. And then we got sucked in, believed we could. And it's one of those things where if I had known then what I know now, I probably wouldn't have jumped into it. You know, I made a lot of those decisions in life. I've learned actually over this past couple of years that sometimes you have to do things that absolutely don't make financial sense or time sense, because there's a lot more opportunity behind it that you can't see yet. You have to find that opportunity. And that's happened for us just over and over and over and over this, you know, past couple of years.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. You know, I was having a conversation with another one of your friends, Duca from Odd Life Crafting.
Yeah, Odd Life.
So nice. Yes. Such nice people. Yeah. So, I was having a conversation with him about similar stuff. And it's like he was saying, you know, sometimes you have to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation to actually get positive things out of that uncomfortable situation. And it makes sense. Like sometimes it doesn't make financial sense. It doesn't make sense from a time perspective. It might not be great for the family, but things will come out of that. And it's good point to make.
So Duca, you bring Duca a perfect example. We're in Florida. We're van lifing. This is just months ago. We're going to a boat show. I've got how many kids with me? I think all four kids with us. It's crazy. We go to a boat show and the Duca calls and he's like, listen, I'm going to the New York Stock Exchange. He told you this story on his podcast. I'm going to the New York Stock Exchange. I was in a commercial. I want you to come with me to watch us ring the bell. And I'm like, dude, I'm in Florida with the family in a van and it's hot. So it's not like it's easy to sleep in the van when it's hot in the summer. And then I look at flights and it's like $700 for a flight or something. All in, I was going to have to spend $1,500 to fly up to New York, abandon the family in a van in Florida. But I was like, he was like, you got to come. It's going to be awesome. And I'm like, financially, it doesn't make sense. Time-wise, family-wise, it doesn't make sense. But I believe, you know, so I go up there and I'm like, okay, I'm going to hunt for opportunity, whatever it is. We fly up there. And it ended up being the most crazy experience. We're ringing the bell, but I get to meet the guy that put him in the commercial who owns the New York Stock Exchange. We exchange numbers. I'm in touch with him. I get to meet just a totally different
world.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Because of this, we end up sitting with one of the top traders in the New York Stock Exchange. We're going to make videos with him eventually. He's going to teach us how to day trade on the boat. Like, all this just came out of nowhere. You know, we met another YouTuber. Yeah, so I mean, that's what I mean. Like, I went up there totally in the red. Like, this was not, doesn't make sense to go. But I was like, we're going to find it. We're going to find the potential out there, you know? And it was there. It's always there. So anyways.
Yeah, and mate, that is a perfect example. That's funny that I brought him up as well. Yeah,
because exactly. Absolutely. That's been my life. Like, you get yourself into these situations that are uncomfortable, but make sense in some way, right? And then you just, like, this whole YouTube channel that we created is because we, you know, found Parlay and we need to fix our boat. And like, most people would just be like, well, you give me advice over the phone. We had bought the boat in St. Martin and discovered broken bulkheads. And it's like, teach me how to fix it over the phone. We'll sail it back to the US. That's what everybody told me I should do. But I was like, no, I'm not. I'm going to sail it 1,500 miles down to Panama without knowing how to sail. I'm going to hire some people, help me get the boat down there. And I'm going to like fix the boat next to Parlay. And it didn't make financial sense. It didn't make time sense. We're away from the family. I'm away from the family, but it created this channel and created a lifelong friendship and just the experiences. Like, you can't beat that. And us trying to get into this whole boat life, learn how to sail, learn how to live on a boat, learn how to fix the boat, learn how to maintain, learn how to deal with YouTube. All this came from that opportunity that made no sense. So,
even us sitting down and doing this, because this came about because you're having a conversation with James as we were literally, I think, about 50 miles off of Horta. And then we were both on the same Zoom chat.
Yeah. I was just that day, I was like, I was tired and I'm always tired. And I'm like, I'm just going to get on the Zoom chat. Let's see what James is doing. And then like 2 minutes into it, he's like, oh, my friend Andy's here. I was like, Andy, what? Andy? And he's like, yeah, Andy, you want to meet him? And then you show up and you're like, oh, I know you. I heard of you. I was like, what? And then we're doing this talk now, you know? So it's, I love it.
If
you're looking for it, you can find it. And honestly, it's not until right this second as we're talking about it, that I realized that's probably like my mantra this year, you know, to go search for opportunity to make whatever you're doing worth it. Because there's a lot of time and money that goes into just the things you can do, you know, all this opportunity cost of things you could be doing, but you can always make what you're doing worth it, whether it's, you know, sitting here chatting or whatever it is, or us going to a boat show 2,000 miles away. Like, we'll find people, we'll meet people. It'll be amazing. We'll make it amazing.
Yeah. So, it's a good motto to live by as well. All right, so what did you do? What was your work like? What career were you in before you decided to go heavy into van life and boat life? What were you doing?
Yeah, I worked in oil and gas. Okay, so in high school, I worked on computers randomly. Austin, Texas, you know, Michael Dell was there. Everybody's dream, I'm going to be Michael Dell and be rich and work on computers. So that's kind of what I did. After high school, I had a small company. I was really just like consulting for small businesses, like a pizza chain, a real estate company. Those were the two that kind of built me up. And I did that for a while and went through life. I don't know, I was like 22, 23, something like that. Broke up with my girlfriend at the time. We were in LA doing work out there. And I came back to Austin. I was like, I had nothing. I had to start over in life is kind of what I felt like around 22. And I stayed with my mom. I took a year and a half and I just, nothing. I just watched movies and I read a ton. And I decided to go back to school. I felt like that's what I need to do. I wanted to be a lawyer. So I started during that year and a half, I studied the LSAT, which is the test you have to take before you go to law school. And I had several friends that had finished college and decided they wanted to do that. I hadn't even gone to college yet, but I was studying the LSAT. I did pretty good in a lot of the, some of the practice tests. I was taking it pretty seriously. So I decided to go back to school. Went back to school, studied supply chain, met my wife. I was going to UT in Austin. I transferred to Houston. I got into supply chain, never followed the law degree, and got into oil and gas. So I'm telling you all of this because this was all a path that I was following because it kind of made sense in society. Okay. I have no passion in going to school. I was great at it. And just to prove a point, I wanted a 4.0 in college. So I got a 4.0 in college. I got A's in but I guess I should start before. In high school, through high school, I failed pretty much all of my courses. I never graduated high school. I ended up getting a GED, which is like a equivalency test. I never was into that. Okay. But in college, I was like, I can do this. Like I can do it just to do it. I had no passion in it, but I did it to do it. And I went through this career, got into supply chain, oil and gas, worked for Schlumberger, which is the biggest oil field services company. And then I got into with the big boys. I went over to the operator side with BHP Billiton, which is like an Exxon, a BP type. And there, that's where you can make big money. So I manage contracts for drilling and fracking, which are the two biggest, sexiest, in parts within the industry.
That's the cash.
And yeah, it's the cash. And on the operator side, you control the suppliers, right? So it was wonderful. I moved up quickly in the company, did great, but I hated every second of it. I never liked it, never. From the day I started going back to college and stopped working for myself, I did not enjoy my life. I did it because it was like a discipline thing. And I never had discipline before, ever in my life. And I had to make a change. So I did the discipline thing and I got into, so I grew in the company and was making money, but I hated it. I hated every moment of it. And I did well, but I hated it. So I decided after we had our first son, Mary and I talked, I said, hey, I have to start my own business. I have to do something, but I didn't know what I was going to do. And that's like the crazy thing when you're like, someone's like, I'm going to start a YouTube channel. Well, like, do you have experience? No, but I just believe I can do something like that. At the time, it was just anything. So I started selling coffee. I really liked Vietnamese coffee. We put that in Keurig cups and we sold them on Amazon. I bought e-bikes and imported them from China and sold those. I did other random things on Amazon. I was just trying to, but I still... I solved the whole work for myself thing, but I still wasn't passionate for what I was, doing. So, eventually I knew that I wanted to do YouTube. I've known ever since 2012. I met this guy named Jesse Wellens through my brother. My brother was working at Google. He put on a big music festival and he hired in a bunch of vloggers at the time, the biggest vloggers at the time. One of them was Jesse Wellens. It was, I'm sure you've seen his videos, but he did like girlfriend, boyfriend, they prank each other. And then he split off on his own and he's huge. He's one of the biggest guys out there now. Okay. And I got to spend a weekend with them. I didn't know what they did. I just know they were talking to cameras all the time and they were like really excited. And they were like, they're doing something or always filming themselves. And it wasn't until later that I realized I'd seen him in his videos before. And so at that moment, I realized like, okay, this was 2012. I was working, in the operator side, supply chain, and I was moonlighting as a YouTuber that had no views. Like I decided we're gonna vlog. Mary and I vlogged every day. We vlogged for like months straight, put videos out. Some of those videos are still online, but they were horrible. We got tens of views and I just stopped. But I knew I wanted to do that. Okay, so ever since then, for the past 10 years, every significant thing that has happened in my life, I have filmed. I never edited it, but I filmed it. So everything, we're talking about like, I surprised Mary with a car one year for Mother's Day, for her first Mother's Day. It was an extravagant thing where I got a bow, we hit it in a restaurant. I filmed all of it. With my son, his first birthday, we got a bunch of balloons, like 6 foot weather balloons, like 2 meter wide. And we flew him like a kite with balloons. I filmed all of it, but I never edited anything. So of course, this whole boat experience, you know, fast forward 10 years, I'm filming everything, our adventures in like Las Vegas, maybe, where my wife and I met, and we ended up getting married there secretly before we had a real wedding. All sorts of crazy stuff. We filmed it. I never did anything with the footage. Nothing. I have like terabytes and terabytes of footage. And same thing was about to happen with us buying this boat and fixing it. Until Colin was like, this is a couple months of me being down in Panama after bringing the boat there. Colin's like, why are you filming everything? Like, go make some videos. I'm like, yeah. So many excuses. Dude, I have so many excuses. Editing is so hard. It takes so much time. I love it, but it just takes so much time. But yeah, it's peer pressure. At the end of the day, it was peer pressure. He was like, why don't you go make some videos? I'm like, yeah, I will one day. You know, he's like, okay, or you could do it now. And then it wasn't until one day he was posting on Facebook about the bulkheads. He had been doing this for a while because we were discovering Lagoon 450's massive bulkhead issue. It's systemic. There's hundreds of boats out there. And he started getting some really negative feedback. People started just bullying him online, right? So he was like, dude, you're next to me. Will you go post
telling the truth.
Yeah. He was like, can you go post some stuff online about your boat? You're literally next to me. It would help like people see that it's not just I'm crazy. And it got some traction. It did really well. And at first I had comments turned off for some reason. I think I chose like made for kids. And if you do that, they turn off the comments. A week later, I changed it and I fixed it, like the settings, and I made it like not for kids. So the comments were turned on and it got like 50,000 views or something like that. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that was just some crap I threw together. You know, it was like a 3-minute video, a walkthrough, me ranting about the boat and the bulkheads are broken and how this is ridiculous and how everybody needs to go check their bulkheads, because people were yelling at Colin about like, stop telling people to check the bulkheads. There's nothing wrong with them. And I was like, it's easy. If you go check your bulkheads, I'll pay for them to be checked, because it's literally taking off a piece of trim and you're breaking some glue. So I was like, I'll pay for the glue to go back, you know. The trim to go back. it was funny and I was ranting and it was a great video. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, it's been 10 years of me filming these videos. And like, all I had to do was just put one out.
Just put one
obviously,
out.
Obviously, yeah, but I'm doing now exactly what I want to do. I like filming stuff that I do, crazy stuff, different stuff from other people, and making videos of it and putting it out there. If nobody watched them, I would be happy. Okay, if I had the money, if I was a millionaire, I think you were talking to, I think Jane, that podcast, you were talking about, you know, if you had made millions, what would you be doing? I think you mentioned you'd be playing music, right? If I had millions and I did not have to worry about anything, I would be making videos like I'm doing right now, and I'd be posting them online, watch them, I would still make them, and I would love it. There's a sense of accomplishment. For some reason, maybe I'm a narcissist. Maybe I'm too into myself, but I love making videos and entertaining myself. I'm finally doing what I always wanted to do. It just includes boat life, and we're just doing it while we're sailing. And I guess, yeah, that's the only thing I would not necessarily change is I find that on YouTube, it's really easy. You should niche down and do something very specific for YouTube to figure out what you're all about. I cannot wait to grow to a point one day where I can do the things that I want to do and show the things that I want to do and still have a good following. You know, right now, if I make boat work videos where I'm fiberglassing or grinding anything and fixing something in the boat, it's like amazing views. If I do something else, like Highfield has this tiny little dinghy. It's about 3.8 feet, almost 4 feet long. It's literally about this big. And it's an inflatable dinghy that's designed exactly like they're real dinghies. It's meant for a showroom to show off all the technology, from the valves to the double hull, to the transom, to the tubes. Everything is perfect to scale. So I was like, I want to make a little kid's dinghy. So I made a video about how we put a engine, a trolling motor, and a battle-borne battery inside, and like one of our kids like had a dinghy, and he has the world's tiniest dinghy, but people don't like to really see that cool. Right now. And well, yeah, I thought it was cool, but like people on YouTube,
I do that.
Our current viewers don't think that's cool. They're like, this sucks. If you keep on putting out videos like this, I'm gonna unsubscribe. I want to see boat work videos. So I'm experimenting with all that. But yeah, I would. That's the kind of stuff that I want to do. Eventually, one day, we'll do those types of videos. You know, like I want to just yesterday, we were talking about the trampoline up front. The kids dig their toes in the net and they break the net. So we need a new trampoline. I was joking. I don't remember what on one of the comments. I think I mentioned on the YouTube videos, I mentioned, oh, I want to replace that with a real trampoline. And then people were flipping out like, you can't do that. You can't put a real trampoline on there. That's a trampoline meant for laying down and for the forward crew to check the sails. It's not meant to bounce. And I was like, I could do whatever I want. So I'm absolutely going to change those two real trampolines. We're going to reach out to like a trampoline company, like a real, you know, backyard type competitive trampoline company and see if they can help us make some custom trampolines that we can like, you know, every time we anchor, I'll jump off the coach roof, land on the trampoline, double flip, dive in to check the anchor, you know, but that's the kind of stuff that I would love to make. I love making those like that, that are interesting to me and then hopefully interesting to other people too.
I mean, it's great that you've been able to, I mean, I think the thing is as well, obviously you've been through this part of your career, which you just completely detest, like, you know, working in oil and gas supply chain. I never enjoyed my job working in oil and gas. I always hated it. And I was always like searching for a way out, which was basically me just like working for myself, doing whatever it is I need to do at the time, just finding odd jobs here and there and just picking the stuff up. That's
just
what
hustling.
I ended up doing this year.
Stuff.
Yeah, which has actually been really good. Like I've made money like selling watches and stuff this year, like loads of random bits and bobs, which has been cool. But it's great that you've been able to get through that and then find something that you're actually incredibly passionate about. And it actually work as well. Like you've been making good videos about the boat work and people have been watching those, like they've gained a lot of traction. So yeah, good on you. Like that's incredible that you've been able to come out of all this and you figured out exactly what you want to do and you started doing it.
It's been incredible, but it took 10 years. So 2012, 9 years, you know, before I started, that's ridiculous. Okay. I knew this is what I wanted to do. No question about it. I knew I wanted to do YouTube and I wanted to make interesting content and videos. I knew it. And I didn't do it for 9 years. So there's stuff that people are out there, they know they need to do, or they know they don't want to do this and they want to do more of that. They do it now. Like it's not about the money. It's not about feeling secure. You will never feel secure. I'm sure you too, but I've met so many just massively wealthy people. They don't feel any more secure than us.
I think the thing is as well, it's like having money does help, but it doesn't fix things. Obviously if you're, you know, if you're a billionaire, that's completely different, but like, you know, if you've got problems with your family, if you've got problems with motivation, if you've got problems with confidence, no amount of cash is going to fix that. That's stuff that you literally have to do by just exploring yourself and figuring out what the hell's going on. So at what point did you decide to stop with your career or stop with your main day job and then start moving into what you're doing now? Like, what was that transition like and when did that happen?
So that transition happened after we had our son, so our first kid. And it's actually a little bit longer of a story. We decided to move. We were in Houston. We decided to move to Austin. And my mom, she lives in Austin. It's a house I grew up in. She agreed to help us with the baby so that I could work during the day on whatever. So I was just going to go out there and find something to work on and find some kind of business to start. So that was the toughest part, actually. I would say originally it's quitting the corporate world, losing all the benefits, losing all the potential of the future and that security because both of us were working. So I had to quit my job and it was hard. I mean, it was a year, maybe 2 year process of trying to get away because as I would quit, then I'd get, you know, they'd offer me something else, either a better position or a little bit more money or a retention bonus. So it just kept on. I realized at the end, it was never going to end. So I just had to sacrifice whatever it was.
Yeah,
exactly. So we walked away. It was the craziest decision. It was long before boat life, though, and it was before van life as well. It was just I have to do something else, you know. So I figured out what I want to be when I grow up. I figured out in steps, you know. First, it was I want to work for myself, and then I realized, okay, working for myself wasn't enough. You know, it had to be something I really enjoyed. And then, you know, those are the steps. But so that happened first. So I guess you could say like it was easy for us to transition to boat life because we had been making this whole shift for the past, I don't know, 7 years, 8 years. you know, getting out of the corporate world, one of us, and, you know, starting a business, started hustling, and then figuring out, you know, where we wanted to be. We moved back to Houston. That's when we got the van. And it was like, okay, how can we transition the business and the work we're doing to something we could do remotely while we're van lifing, possibly? And then the boat life thing kind of came up. And then we also realized, you know, we definitely don't want to work for the man anymore. And then, you know, the transition has happened. So it's not easy. I guess I never thought about it like that. You know, when I talk to people, I'm like, oh, dude, just quit your job and go do this. Like, if you know what you want. But it did take us it took us a good 7 years of transitioning our mentality to, you know, testing different things, different careers, you know, non-corporate. To, you know, and then at the same time, so there's another part of us, me and Mary, we love like the idea of off-grid. So sometime in this whole journey, we bought a container and we were going to convert it on a piece of land that we bought. And we're going to convert it and make some tiny houses. That's how I first watched Duca from Odd Life Crafting. So this is like full circle.
That's
in my
where
life.
I first watched him as well, actually. I watched him build a little house years ago. Yeah.
In a container. And I was like, I can do that. So like, these are the people, like, you know, the people that I've met that I've become friends with now, lucky enough to have met in person now, are people I've been watching for the past decade, you know, and it's just crazy how it all comes around. So Duca, they were building the tiny house and then they moved onto a boat. I had no idea he went onto a boat. It wasn't until I met him in Annapolis. So, yeah, they flew into Panama to quarantine with Parlay, and I had left. So I was staying on Parlay at the time because my boat was full of fiberglass dust. They stayed in my cabin, and then I met them in Annapolis. They were like, oh my gosh, we stayed in your cabin. And I was like, okay, but y'all seem so familiar. Like, how do I know you? They're like, oh, we sailed on this boat and we're fixing this boat. I was like, no. I was like, I don't know you, but I know you. And you know, through talking, we figured out like, oh dude, he's the dude with the container house. Which we had our container house. I started talking about that because off grid, that's the dream. I want to build container houses. I wanted to have them all over the world and be able to like have a piece of land in a mountain somewhere, a piece of land by a beach somewhere, maybe in, you know, we found something in Panama now, but I had no idea at the point at that time where or when. And, you know, we can bounce around these different properties. And that was part of the process of figuring out that I never wanted to be in one place long term. That just does not do it for me. It's what society does and everybody's used to it. You grow up in an area, you move for work, you settle down, but settling down, that's just not me at all. Like I was the kind of guy that like every few weeks, every few months, I had to change all the furniture, the layout in the house. And just, I needed something new. I needed new stimulation, you know? So that was part of us figuring out, oh, maybe small, tiny houses wasn't exactly the thing or the timing wasn't right, but a van was. So we have all these different avenues, right, in our lives, like the way we want to live, the type of work we want to do, the types of lives we want to live, and what we kind of figured all those three things out at the same time. And it just progressed towards, it was going to be on a boat.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's.
I mean, it's good. The thing is, it's like, obviously it's taken you a long time to get to that point, but, you know, it is easy to say. It's like you just said, you know, if people ask, oh, how did you do this? And you're like, oh, just quit your job. It's not a problem. It's like, like for me, that was actually a big, big deal. Cause I was in like the corporate world for a long time with like very comfortable companies. And it was only because I was in the Middle East for a long time, and it was only when we had enough of the Middle East, we were like, this place is full of shit, we need to get out. We decided, okay, let's go to Europe. And then when we de facto decided on coming to Spain because we can go to Turkey, I was like, okay, if we go to Spain, I'm going to have to work for myself because there's no way I'm getting a job in Spain anywhere. Just like big business just isn't big over here, basically. You've got some stuff in Madrid and Barcelona, everything else is really quiet. It's a lot of farm tourism, basically. That's it. So I was like, I'm gonna have to work for myself. So I was kind of forced into it. And then it worked well for a couple of years. And then the boat thing just managed to like work its way back into there, like luckily. But you know, and this is why I'm so appreciative of like you guys that make YouTube videos, because I always had the dream. Like buying a sailboat and just sailing around the world. Like I think I was 17. That's when we started wanting to actually do that. Yeah, it was a good thing we didn't know. Like we were going to move to Australia, me and my friend, I think we saved up like $20,000 or something.
Okay.
And we were going to just like get a shitty boat and try and get as far as possible. Like we would have died.
Yeah, and then work in farms, right? I heard you mention that in another.
Yeah, yeah, that's true,
work
actually.
Work in farms, just kind of cruise and work along the way.
Which at the time, that was normal. Like there was a lot of people doing that. We were going on forums and, you know, Reddit type of stuff, that type of thing back in the day. Yeah. I can't remember what they were called back then. But yeah, there was people doing that. So there was lots of people like cruising and they were like, yeah, you can get a job at this farm. You can get a job in this town. They have cafes. They have restaurants that employ people. That's what you did because the internet wasn't a thing. Like you couldn't get internet on your phone. So that was basically what you did. So yeah, it was a good plan. I just think we like would have legitimately killed ourselves because we weren't sensible. And the boat would not have been like seaworthy at all because we had like hardly any money. But it was only I think it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago when a friend alerted me to like Delos, which I think there was probably the only channel at the time. And he was just there's some guys like cruising around the world. And I think they were actually in Australia as well or somewhere close, which is like where I wanted to start. And he was like, yeah, they're putting all the videos on YouTube. I was like, no way. Like, they're actually doing that. And they're filming it as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And yeah, it was from then. I was just like, oh, I need to get back into that. Like, why on earth have I forgot? Like, everything gets in the way, doesn't it? You know, the corporate world gets in the way. Mm-hmm. Everything you've got going on, you're buying daft shit. It takes you away from, like, what some of those initial dreams were. But yeah, some of them are good. Some of the ideas you have when you're like 17 and really drunk are actually good ideas. Just need to wait on them for a while.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, so you got into it because of Delos, watching his videos, or got back into it.
Yeah, I got back into it. Yeah, but well, I mean, so during that period where I like didn't own a boat and I wasn't cruising or anything like that, I would any excuse I could use to get out on a boat or do anything on a boat. I take it like I used to run a couple of companies when I was in the Middle East. So like every time we had like a celebratory event or a staff party or, you know, we had a big month, you know, we hit the target. So I was like, right, boat trip, guys. Used to get like 30, 40 people, big massive boat. You know, we were always out there. So any excuse. Yeah, like owning a boat over there is just like impossible in terms of cost. It's just so, so expensive.
Oh, okay.
And the sailing actually isn't that great around those parts anyway. But yeah, I mean, it was watching Delos that got me back into it. And as soon as we got to Spain, like I literally decided to move to the area where we're in Spain because there was a marina so close. I was like, I can live in that house there and then I can have my boat there. And then
finished. Man.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we started watching Delos after we, like, once boat life was a thing. Then, of course, I'm doing research and I'm watching more channels. So Delos, of course, La Vagabond, the Zataras. But, we got a chance to meet Delos a few months back in Shelter Bay. I knew they were going there. I was headed there and got to hang out with them for a couple of days. And there's such, like, it's amazing because he's finishing 10 years of this and we're just starting, you know, and just seeing like where you can be 10 years from now. It's rare that you get to do that, right? Get to see like, well, how am I going to feel 10 years from now?
Exactly.
I would love to be where he is 10 years from now, you know, or where he is today for me 10 years from now. It's amazing. They're just living life, doing just the things that they want to do and continuing their journey. And they're having a blast with family, you know, they have their baby and they're just living life. We had dinner. He came on the boat. We got to mess around. They put some stickers up. We toured Delos. It's like, this is his life. This is his life. After 10 years, the excitement is still the same. It's different, but it's the same type of energy, you know? So if I can, if I can feel the way I feel today, just starting this journey, this boat life, like in 10 years, I feel the same. I don't know. I've honestly never stuck with anything more than, I don't know, a few months. So doing this boat thing for a year and a half so far, that's like a real big deal to me. And I foresee it, you know, continuing.
I think it'll work out long term for you. I mean, you know, if you can think as far back as you want to go when it comes to like, what do you actually want to do with your life? And, you know, living on a boat and traveling around the world kind of ticks every box that you've ever really been aiming for. It should work perfectly for you.
Work for myself, off the grid, adventure, excitement, be with the family. Like it's everything that I want. It's everything that I want. So that's why we're so stoked. It's super stressful. Don't get me wrong. It's not like everything's perfect. It's beyond stressful, but it's everything that I want. Finally, we're getting to do what we want.
Well, it's worth working for, you know, like, and so obviously we're in the same position. Like, well, you're a bit ahead of me because you already got the boat and you started fixing the boat. I'm getting the boat in a couple of months. I actually pick it up in December and I'm going to start work on it. But it's like, God, getting to that point, it can be tough. Like, if you're a transient human being, like, you know, you do rent, you know, maybe you're in between jobs quite often, or you work for yourself, you don't own that much garbage. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be a very easy process to just like, okay, I'm now just going to move on my boat, live on the boat,
and
go cruising. That's fine. But like, yeah, if you've got kids, if you've got mortgages, if you've got cars, if you've got rental properties, whatever, like, it is tough. It is stressful getting everything sorted out.
Yeah. And there's so much, it feels like opportunity that you're losing, you know, when you're getting rid of, say, a rental property. We had that small piece of land. We had a condo, just the random stuff that we weren't like real estate investors, but, you know, we lived in the condo, we kept it and rented it. You know, we bought a piece of land, we were going to build a house on it. And then we had to like, do we keep it? Do we sell it? Like, it's appreciated so much. Is it worth it? But at some point it's like, you got to put a price on what you want to do, the dreams. And I think the dreams are worth a whole lot. They really are, but it's tough to quantify, you know? So it's really tough. It's more of the idea of the dream, like what it can become one day. Is it worth losing $100,000 on this property because we're selling it, or that we could potentially make in the next 5 years?
Yeah.
We just went all in. That's the only way I know how to do things. Just go like 100%, dive all in and like have nothing else. And that's what we're doing. It's not the best way, but it's the only way I can get myself to do things and like fully commit.
it's not general advice that you're putting out there. It just works for you.
No, don't do that. It's ridiculous. Like, don't do that. But for me, it's the only way. I can't be like losing weight. I've been back in the States for a bit now. So like, you just eat like crazy. I lose weight when I go to Panama, when I was there for a year. And then back here, it's like nuts. We gain weight. So I've just started a diet like 3 days ago, and I'm going nuts. Like, I'm eating salads, I'm eating chicken.
What diet is it? Or is it just like calorie deficit? No,
it's
diet.
Yeah, exactly. It's more just calorie deficit, like lower carb. It's more just, I know like how I should eat. I should be eating healthy. It's more just eating healthy and not overeating and not eating like a fourth meal at midnight, because we love to do that.
That's the bad one.
But that's my favorite.
As we love. I know. Just a favorite as well.
Like order some food in. Oh, or some noodles, some ramen noodles in the middle of the night.
Man, do you know what I literally had for my dinner today? I'm usually a very healthy eater. Like, I've never really been overweight. I always keep on top of it. I had like two, I wouldn't necessarily say family size. That's a bit of I had two large Popeyes. I had like two double burgers, like double fries, double onion. It was amazing.
I'm all about that. I can do that every single day. We're just so bad.
I could as well.
So bad. But I need to go like 100% all in, and I need like some kind of like motivation. So with this diet thing, we were visiting Mantis Anchors. You know Mantis, right? They make the best anchors, or some of the best anchors. So they're in Houston. They're just around the corner. We went to visit them, and we're talking about anchors, and Greg, the designer and also the owner, he was like, I was mentioning something about I've gained a lot of weight, and then he goes, $100. I'm like, what? And he's like, $100, whoever loses the most weight before Annapolis. And I'm like, you're on. And that was all. I've been trying to get on a diet for the past month, okay? Like, every day has been like, in 2 days or after this weekend. But then he was like, $100, and I was like, nobody cares about $100. I do, but you know what I mean.
But you want to win.
Yeah, I want to win. And then he's like, it's on. We walk back into the shipping area, and he's got this like commercial, you know, you weigh in tons, like in thousands of pounds. But we get on, and I'm 195 pounds. He's like 194 pounds, and it's on now.
All right, yeah, good starting point.
We got 2 months before, just short of 2 months before Annapolis Boat Show. Whoever loses the most weight, and I'm going to win, guaranteed, because it's like, it's on.
You could shift a good amount of weight in 2 months.
Yeah,
man,
go ahead.
Like, the biggest thing for me, and something that's just worked so, so well. Well, I've done like the ketogenic diet. I've done that a few times. That's great for dropping weight quick. It's tough to stick to.
Yeah.
Well, what's nice about a normal, healthy diet is if it's, you know, if it's a Friday night and you've had a few drinks or you're chilling or whatever, you can just have a chocolate bar and get away with it. It's not going to do anything. Whereas keto, that will completely destroy an entire week's worth of gains.
Yeah, you reset. Loss,
whatever. Right? Yeah. It just stops your keto and then you have to clock back in. It'll take a few days. So great, but it doesn't really work for me. It makes me quite generally angry. I found that intermittent fasting, so I now eat like during a 6-hour window, and then outside of that, all I do is drink tea and water, and it's great. Like I think because I've been doing the work on the house, I've gone like 3 weeks now without lifting weights or exercising.
Oh wow!
I haven't put on a pound.
Really?
Yeah, and I've been eating some average food as well. So Joe Rogan does it all. I think he's done it for years, actually.
I love
a big proponent of it.
I love intermittent fasting. It's amazing if I can at least kind of control myself a little bit. So I've done like 18 hours and then just eat in the 6 hours.
Yeah, but
my problem is I somehow can manage to eat enough during those 6 hours in the beginning and the end to just offset whatever benefits. So I can still gain weight. I can't say like eat anything you want during those 6 hours. I can still gain weight. So what I've noticed is if I just really calorie restrict and do a little bit of IF, so I won't eat until, I don't know, say like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, lunchtime.
Okay.
I'm fine. It doesn't even bother me, right? I just drink some coffee. And then around that time, I'll eat, but I'll be eating really healthy foods, like all the stuff I hate eating that I generally never eat. But, you know, salads, broccoli, crap like that, and then maybe some chicken.
Rabbit food.
<thing. laughs> Yeah. But then I'm still like, I'll put some sauces on there, like, you know, some whatever dressing, and then I'll just eat. I eat, but just really, really restricted. I probably do, I don't know, like 1,200 to 1,500 calories in the day, but I don't restrict like timing wise. And I can cut about 2.5 pounds a week. And, you know,
that's great.
The problem. Yeah. What's not great is that it's a cycle, right? I can do it. I've done it about 10 times and I've lost and then I gain it all back. So this time, my plan is after I drop down that I'll just do some real lifestyle changes. Yeah, where I'm like eating generally healthy, but also a little bit unhealthy, so I don't go crazy, you know, to the other side of the spectrum where I'm just eating nuts. Because otherwise, you know, it's just like every meal is my last meal. And sometimes we skip meals and I just gain weight. It's crazy. You can't do that in the States.
Another one that we did as well, like, that really, really helped. So I love peanuts and I have gone up and down a bit in weight, not massively, but I'll move around 5 kilos up and down just based on how many peanuts I eat. And one day my wife was like, you know, you're eating a lot of peanuts. You know, it puts on weight. Why don't you try something different? I love peanuts. What are you talking about? So she went and got the peanuts, but inside the shell, we call them monkey nuts. I don't know if anybody else does that, but like you look like a monkey when you eat them. So it's just peanuts in a shell. Anyway, so you get a massive bag. There's like a tenth of the amount of nuts in there. It's a bit of a chore opening them up, a bit of a task, quite an enjoyable pastime, you know, if that's what you might be into. And that's been brilliant for us. So like we're probably eating about a tenth of the amount of peanuts for like our last like snack before like we sit on the sofa and chill out. And like, you know, we just sit there like having a little chat, like, it's actually good. This works. It's another little dieting tip.
Oh, I know what you mean. Because instead of taking that like jar and just pouring, you know, 20 peanuts out and eating them, that 20 takes, I don't know, what, 5-10 minutes. So
Yeah. So yeah, you just sit there, do it, watching TV, and it's a slow process, isn't it? Like, and it doesn't help the older you get either. Like, Jesus, like when I was in my 20s, I could drop weight no problem at all. Like, without an issue, I could just do some cardio, change my food up a little bit.
Okay.
Like, as soon as you're into your mid to late 30s, like, totally different, completely different.
Okay. I feel it. For me, it's I can lose weight the same, but I gain weight much easier. So it's just, I can ruin like 10 pounds of loss. I can ruin that in a week. No problem. I gain 10 pounds.
Same.
Obviously a lot of it is water weight and stuff like that, but so what would happen was I was in Panama. So one thing that you'll notice once you're on the boat, and everybody will tell you this, it's going to be so easy to stay in shape. Just in general, you're out in the heat, you're working, you're doing stuff. You're not just bored and eating, you know? So when I was down in Panama working, I would lose, I don't know, 10, 15 pounds every time I went down there. And then I'd come back for a couple of weeks, you know, relieve my mom. My mom was watching the kids. I'd be with the family and I just gained 10, 15 pounds. So like every time I went back, the boys, they'd be like, what the heck happened to you? Like, America happened to me. It's so good there. We eat like five meals a day. There's fast food everywhere.
It's the taste of freedom. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But we're in Panama, we're in the jungle. And it's like, well, if you miss dinner, then you just don't eat. Like, you could go make something. You make like a little sandwich with some like lunch meat and, you know, that's it. But I want to do a lot of stuff. I want to get in shape, you know. I want to feel good. I remember feeling good when I was in shape. I'd feel so good every day, and now I'm just dragging. And
It's much nicer, you know. It's just like daily chores as well, and like, you know, I just getting off the toilet. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've got strong legs, or if you're not carrying that much weight, just a basic thing like getting out of a chair or getting up off the toilet is not a massive chore. It just make a massive difference to your life. Right, I'll tell you what, just moving on to like the cruising part now. You're getting your boat fixed up. I tell you, it must be coming close to being pretty much ready to actually go and start cruising full time on now.
You know what? It's one of those things, it's never going to be ready. So ever I see evolving. So many people. I see so many people that have bought their boats and they're in the States, right, in Texas. And they are trying to prep the boat and outfit it to where it's done, but we never had the luxury of doing that. So I fixed the bulkheads. It took me 11 months. I thought it was going to take 4 weeks. My first video, I'm like 3-4 weeks. We're going to be out of here. I was in Panama and it took 11 months. Okay. I mean, I had to come back a few times. There was like a month there where we had COVID and all sorts of crazy stuff happened, but it took 11 months. Parlay left. They went to San Blas Islands. They splashed before me. They went to go play for 3 weeks. And Colin was like, you sure you don't want to come? And I was like, oh, I want to come so bad. But if I go with you guys, I'm never going to finish the boat. I need some motivation. So my whole goal during those 3 weeks, we worked day and night, literally to like 2-3 in the morning while they were playing. And I knew I was missing out and waiting for them to come back so I could be in the water and leave with them to go cruise a little bit. So my point is you're never going to be ready. I finished the bulkheads. The bulkheads are solid. There's not a sound in that boat when you're sailing.
So nice.
The contrast is coming down from St. Martin to Panama. It sounds like a tornado in your boat, a hurricane. It sounds like people taking a sledgehammer, smashing on the hull in the bridge deck. It sounds like wood constantly cracking. So you're hearing wood cracking literally and fiberglass breaking. That's what the hulls were doing when the bulkheads break. You have the two hulls and they just wiggle outwards, inwards, inboard, outboard. And that's what you hear. And now we've managed to fix it to where it's completely silent. It's night and day. And
it's crazy. So, just like how they pump these out of the factory off the production line, like such flimsy structural integrity. Like it is so bad. It's so bad.
It's just enough to be a charter catamaran that's doing coastal cruising for 5 years. That boat is designed for that purpose. And then afterwards, it really doesn't matter, does it? In their minds. So, but now that's a non-issue. My bulkheads are ridiculous. I'm so proud of those bulkheads. I like them so much. I don't know if your first really nice car that you got. I got a car that I bought myself and I would go, you know, go downstairs and go sit in it. And it just like gave me pleasure, right? Like for the first month or two, I would just go sit in it or drive it and for no reason. So my bulkheads, it's kind of the same thing. I'll go downstairs and just go look at the bulkheads because there are no walls covering those bulkheads right now. The cabins, the forward cabins are still in a shambles, but I can see my bulkheads and damn, are they strong. And they're just so well done, you know? I go look at those bulkheads. The boat is like structurally perfect, mechanically excellent, although we do have some engine issues right now. But I splashed the boat when Parlay came back from San Blas. And Colin helped me fix up the engines. We had some random problems. All the belts needed to be changed, oil and some other relay issues, fixed all of it. And then we literally took off after 2 days and the boat was not ready, but we started cruising. So we went to Bocas del Toro, hung out there for about a month, did a regatta out there. Then we came back to Shelter Bay. But my point is we started cruising and we lived on the boat and we're on the boat and we brought the boat all the way back just about a month ago now, about 3 weeks ago. We brought the boat from Panama all the way to Mexico. We stayed on the boat for 3 weeks in Mexico, and then we brought the boat back to Texas, and that was 3 weeks ago. So
nice.
The boat is great, and you can totally cruise, but I still have a ton of work. So we'll be doing the work along the way. I got to fix all the walls in the cabins. Luckily, there's some of our patrons are have the same boat. They have the 450. They're in the same marina that I'm in. The guy's name is Dean Boyd. He's Dean Boyd Interiors. He's like the guy that people go to with these private jets in Arkansas to go get their interiors redone.
Oh, and, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And he has a 450 and he's redoing his interior and rebuilding the cabinet. So like our, it's just been a blessing. I'm telling you, I run into Colin. I don't exactly run into it. I kind of force my way into Colin's life. Okay. He'll tell you the same, but he helps us repair the structural part of the boat and the mechanical part. Now we're back here and you know there's somebody that knows all the cosmetic stuff and is willing to help. So we did not do this on our own.
And furniture and stuff.
So we're going to fix all the cabinetry. We got to build a hard top. I'm going to copy Parlay's hard top, inset solar panels. We're building Sugar Scoop extensions, which I really wanted to do. Parlay did that. I never got a chance to do it, but Colin's given me a ton of tips on how to make it a little bit better. I got this, like, we got this just ongoing joke where I have to one-up everything he does. He helps me one-up him because, you know, I'm always the second person to do what he's doing first that no one's done before, like the bulkheads or the Sugar Scoop extensions or the hard top. So it's learning from other people. It's been just a tremendous advantage for us. And so we got to rebuild the interiors, hard top, also we got to get batteries, and we got all these battleborne batteries that they decided to sponsor us and help us out. They love the story. So we drove out to Reno and picked up all these batteries in the van, and they're
still sitting drive. In the house.
Yeah, huge drive, but you know, and then it's crazy. Like, this is what I mean. Like people are like, oh, where are the videos? Well, like I spread myself way too thin. It's because I don't know. I just want everything. It's my own fault. But like we got a new Highfield dinghy in Florida. So we had to tow it back to Texas. And then we drove out to Reno and we're like, let's just bring the dinghy. So then we took the dinghy to the Hoover Dam along the way and drove up and down the Colorado River to find the Hoover Dam. And then we were in San Francisco. So we took it under the Golden Gate Bridge and we went to meet them in Reno and got batteries. And that was all right before we came back. So it's a madhouse.
Nice.
I'm trying to figure out how to organize everything. And that's where Mary can really come in and help us, I think, project manage this business, this life. You're talking about bums on a boat, like really taking all the marketing side stuff seriously and taking all, you know, the whole YouTube business as a whole. We really need help doing that. I'm desperately trying to find an editor right now to help with the videos. I'm editing everything on my own. But we need, in order to make this business a business and make it work in the long run, we need an editor. So we're trying to find one.
Well, you know, I think the most important thing is when it comes down to this, it's like what you are creating and like the story that you're telling is something that you're passionate about and it's real and it's true. And I think that makes a massive difference because like it's very obvious when you watch people who put content online, not necessarily sailing, but just anything, you can tell if they're into it or not. The same way that you can tell if like a stage actor loves working on stage or if a singer is happy being on. You know, like being on a stage or being in a recording studio, you can tell the difference. Like, it's very obvious that, like, that is what you are meant to do and this is what you are loving doing. So it's like, I think all those details you can kind of work out later. It's the product, really, isn't it? You've got to get that right before you figure out the intricacies of how you actually have to sell it.
Yeah. Now is the later, I think. We've got all these crazy things happening, but, like, I need to organize my life, which is the business. You know, I need to organize it all. Like, when do we do what? Like, I have to set up aside enough time to edit every day. Otherwise, I'll get behind again. You know, and just where do we go from here? We're trying to sort it out. So the kids are in school as of today.
Very cool.
We have 3 weeks before the Newport Boat Show, and we're gonna drive there. I think so. We have 3 weeks of nothing but editing and sorting out this business, figuring out you know who we need to hire or what help we can get, and that's kind of where we are right now. It's the first time in my life, I was telling Mary just this morning, like first time in our lives where it's not just an idea. You know, I've had business ideas where I thought would be epic. Like when 3D printers first came out, like I knew it would be a thing, but I knew nothing about 3D printers. So like, how was I going to get involved? Or when drones first came out, when DJI first started making these drones, like the Phantom and the Inspire, I knew like drones were going to be the thing. Nobody had drones yet. And I had this idea where I wanted to make drone tours in vacation places. So they'd be sitting on the beach, put on some goggles, head tracking on the goggles, and we'd go fly the drones around. They'd get to go see the whole area. But I don't know anything about drones. How do I do that? But finally, we're at a point in our lives and in an industry or business that I know like how to do this. Like I really do know what we need to do. We need to put out videos and we need to finish and get somebody help with that. But I know what we need to do for this to excel and succeed. Like the first time in my life that I know how to do it. Not just I have an idea, but I know how to do it. So we just, it's a lot right now, but we're figuring it out. And hopefully by, I don't know, this time next year, it'll be a different story and we'll be putting out, I don't know, 2 videos a week. I'm very aggressive on that.
But just smashing it.
That's my dream, man. If I could do 2 videos a week, we can create the content for that. No problem. I have so much footage, you know, but it's getting it edited in a way that's, you know, good. And maybe finding somebody to come aboard and like help us edit full time, hang out with us, live aboard. I don't know. Maybe find a nanny too. It's so many different options. You know, like, do we just get someone to help with the kids so that we can focus on this? Or do we get someone to help with this? Maybe it's two things. I don't know.
We'll figure it out when you get out there.
This next couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Once you're out on the water as well, you'll get like definitely a different taste of like what, you know, what you need or what's necessary, that type of thing. So what are you thinking about like your actual cruising routes? Have you got a plan in place or do you just like want to get to A, then figure out B? Like, what are you thinking?
Okay. So all the whole planning thing and, you know, knowing what you're going to do in the next few months, a year, I learned to give that up. Once I started fixing the boat. So I had a very well laid out project plan on how we're going to repair the bulkheads, disassemble the cabins, repair all of them, do the hulls, all that stuff. All of that just goes to shit almost instantly. If you rely, but it's not a big deal. If it goes to shit, you just replan. But if you rely on getting your to-do list done to feel good about yourself, which is what I always did, like, oh, I have to finish these things. And then I feel good for the day. You will never feel good and you'll just get massively depressed. So I've learned to kind of go with the flow, which is really difficult for me. So yeah, I have a massive list of boat work and we just get to it. And then like, if you look back, as long as I'm diligent and I'm fairly disciplined and I'm not lazy, then within like, you look after a couple of months and like that list just shrunk a lot. You know what I mean? So the same thing with our cruising plans. I have had plans. I've always had plans. You know, when we came back to Texas, we were supposed to stop in Mexico 2 days, refuel, reprovision, take off. But we ended up staying for 3 weeks and it was amazing. You know, so I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I have dreams of going over to Florida, Bahamas, hanging out for a little bit, going up the East Coast, meeting with a bunch of companies that we're working with, visiting people, visiting friends, coming back down to the Bahamas, exploring the Caribbean. But I also have plans of getting over to Panama again in early next year so that we can cross the canal and maybe cross the Pacific because I want to get to New Zealand. We have some family there. I have an old uncle that I just adore and I want to spend some time with him, you know, before he's too old. And it makes sense for us to do that now. And then we can come back and do Caribbean later. We kind of did a little bit of the Caribbean, but I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe there'll be an opportunity to cross the Atlantic and we go that way. I don't know. But I know that we've kind of been thrown into all of this and I'm finally confident enough to do some passages on my own. And, you know, and one of the big things I'm dealing with now is like docking. It's so difficult to dock. But like, I'm getting that down. So it's crazy. Like we're talking about like life-changing sailing, cruising plans, but like, there's also really small administrative stuff that you have to figure out. Like, can you cross an ocean? You know, Jamie from Parlay did our first passage with us. Luckily it was just a day and a half, but we lost both engines. We lost fresh water. We lost autopilot. Everything went wrong. And, you know, we had the right people there to help us. And, you know, this passage back, Tom also, who was on Parlay, he came along with us and helped out. And, but after that, this last passage, I'm confident. I did my own passage down to a day and a half sail from Texas. We had some friends come in, Precision Sails, crazy people that we meet. So Daryl owns Precision Sales. He was on Parlay. We became good friends because we slept on these couches in the middle of the salon, like to where you don't have places to put your feet. We spent every night like head to head, like, hey, how's it going? You know, my head's this way, his head's this way. And anyways, I took him and his family for our very first like sale passage. And they're like, oh, you really know what you're doing? Like, how many times have you done this? I was like, this is the first time I have done a passage on my own. And they're like, oh, it doesn't seem like that. I'm like, yeah, but it does. It's amazing. It's an amazing adventure. I don't know where we're going to cruise to, but it's going to be somewhere cool. Yeah. So who knows? I have no idea. But I think it's the right approach for you, mate. What's that?
I think it's the right approach for you. Like, I think, you know, you meet some people sometimes and it's like, that, you know, the head might be over there, the head might be over here, but you're just confident, like, no, they'll figure that out. Like, they'll figure it out.
That's me. That's, you know, me.
It will work. They'll have a great time. Don't worry about it.
It's everywhere. And it's not, and it's, you know, it's the same thing. Like when I told my mom, like after we were well into buying a boat, I was like, hey, so we're going to buy a boat. We're going to live on it and live on the ocean. Like, it's crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I don't, but we'll figure it out. I mean, finally, I have some of the stuff behind us, right? Like, I figured out how to fix the boat, which is, it was impossible to me. And we were able to fix the boat. So we'll figure out the sailing. Although, you know, the YouTube community doesn't really like that. They're like, a lot of the sailors that watch these videos are like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. You need to figure that out or you're going to kill people. I'm like, I'll figure it out.
It's the commenters, mate. Like, we've had a lot of discussions about these negative comment people. I don't know any of them, but I don't want to either.
I think if the people that are listening, if they like this and they want to do this, then they should just go do it. And you will find the people along the way to help you. And you'll find the opportunity along the way to make it all work, you know, whether it's like time-wise or financially. And there's so many people out there that are willing to help and teach if you're willing to learn. And I think a lot of people aren't really willing to learn because you have to kind of go in there with like, hey, I don't know anything. That's tough to say.
Yeah, you have to put yourself out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been really tough for me. I mean, I was in a really comfortable position before. I knew everything about supply chain in oil and gas, oil and drilling and fracking. You're the expert. It's really hard to go in. Like, every other person I met this past year is the expert above me, even people with no experience. And then you have to suss through, like, who are the smart people, you know? And I think meeting Colin, being the first person that we were relying on, made all the difference, because he was never giving me crap about, you don't have experience, you don't know what you're doing, you don't know how to sell. He was always just, you can figure it out. And, you know, as I asked questions, he would teach. So I knew that was my original like experience with an expert, you know, someone that was believed that it's okay that you don't know anything. Versus now, most of the people we come across are like, oh, you don't know what you're doing. You can't do that. You can't do that. I was like, no, we can't. We can't. We'll figure it out.
Nothing's hard. Like, nothing's hard. Nothing's complicated when it comes to like managing a boat or maintaining a boat or sailing a boat. You just need to know what you're doing. That's all. And it's easy to learn as well now, because you can just go on YouTube and type in whatever your problem is.
Yeah.
And some excited person has made a video about it somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's really easy.
Totally. And then if you break it, it's fine. There's another video that teaches you how to fix it. And
that teaches you how to fix it.
Yeah, it's a more time thing. Like, it might take you longer to fix it because you've broken it, but it's all good. And you will be more experienced than like 90% of other people after you just fix it one time. Like, I can change an alternator belt on a Yanmar engine, like with my eyes closed. You need like a 13 millimeter spanner and little pry bar, and it's done. Mm. I can do it in so fast. But, you know, the first time took me 4 hours, and it, you know, so you'll figure it out. All of this you can figure out. And I don't know. I love sharing this. I love talking about all this and sharing this with people and getting other people to do it. But I don't know. It's a tough transition.
No, it's good, mate. Like, you know, you're definitely inspiring people. And I think especially when it comes to like the catamaran thing and like the bulkhead issues, like you've done a really good job of illustrating how someone who like, you know, doesn't come from not even a boat building background, but, you know, not even a construction background at that, can take on what seems like an enormous task. Like, there are so many people, I guarantee, would have had the same boat or had a similar boat when that happened, and they're just going, okay, that's a write-off, I can't deal with that. The contractor is going to charge too much, the boat's done. whereas you've just done it yourself. Like, you know, you took a boat into a pretty uncomfortable zone, an uncomfortable area, completely new to you. You know, you've done all that work yourself. You know, you picked out somebody you knew you could learn from, who had that, you know, they had the good advice they could give you, they had the wisdom, they had the experience. You know, and you figured all that out by yourself with no experience boating. So I think you'll be fine.
I mean, I was lucky. We were lucky. There were many times where I was like depressed and sad at night in Panama in the heat. And it was, we were just around the right people. I was just lucky to be next to Parlay. I mean, we tried to make that happen, but still, like, he totally pulled me out of like depression several times. You know, you're covered in fiberglass dust. You still have like weeks of grinding ahead of you. It's painful. It's hot. You're itchy and you just want to give up. And I miss the family. You know, I'd always been around the family. I never knew I loved the family so much, but like they were like what made me whole. You know, so now we stay together. We're going to stay together. We're not going to separate. Like, that was crazy leaving them for almost a year.
Yeah.
You figure out what,
but you know, like, that time apart is actually, it can generally be a good thing. I've always had to like travel for work and stuff. So there's been many times where I've been like gone for a month, but like, if you've never done that or you've never been away or you've never left a family, like, it can really make you appreciate them a hell of a lot more, and it can make you treat them better as well.
Yeah, definitely. You figure out what matters in life and what you want. You know, I'm here. We've been watching Parlay forever. It's hanging out with the boys. I thought I was going to go down there and have the time of my life, which I did. But I thought it would be the ultimate getaway from like this family life, right? Which is what I wanted and what I had. And I had a blast down there. But I was like, damn, I really like the family. Like, this is not right. There's like a huge piece of me missing. You know, my wife, Mary, and the kids. It's like they complete us in this way. And I'm so stoked to get to do all of this with them now and just involve them in everything where they're just a part of all of it, you know? And I don't know, they get to grow up seeing this side of working and also this side of the world, right? They're obviously going to be cruising, but they see how we try to make money and run a business like this, totally non-traditional. I don't know. I think it's the future. I think I'm training them to like see this, and I would love for them to do something like this in the future. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows if that's right or wrong?
It's good. It's like, you know, you're just teaching your kids how to like charter their own course as well. Like, you know, a lot of growing up in the system and being a part of, you know, like the education system or just general, you know, normal society is like, you've got to follow this certain blueprint in order to like get a job so you can secure a mortgage and then work for 30 years and pay it off. Yeah. And it's like, I won't say it's a depressing existence, because it's like, it's great for a lot of people and it suits most people. But God, that is not for me, like, at all. And I very much doubt it'd be for my kids, because he's got at least half of what I have. So, you know, he'll be at least half pissed off with that. I think what you're doing is great. So where can people find your information online, like your YouTube channel? What's the URL and all that stuff?
My YouTube channel is David Shih, S-H-I-H. So I have it was just an old, it was my original channel. We don't have a different name for it yet, but otherwise we call it David Shih Sales as well. I needed to come up last year when we were going to Annapolis. The organizer, Jeff, was like, hey, send me your logo, I can get you in. And I didn't have a logo, so we sat there and made a logo. It's David Shih Sales. It's still that. It's on the hat. I don't know if we're going to keep it or not. I don't know. We'll see. But or if you go on YouTube and you search broken bulkheads, I'll come up. Or Lagoon 450, something like that. Yeah. But man, nice. That's so cool talking to you. I remember listening to your podcasts when we were wanting to start boat life. You know, of course, I go right on like, okay, live aboard. I want live aboard podcasts, but not sailing specific, not like we're racing sailing, but like living on a sailboat. And of course you came up and I remember listening to you, and I think it's crazy that we're talking to you now. So Amazing.
Yeah, it's great, mate. I appreciate being able to share your story, because it's like your level of enthusiasm that you bring to this is just like, it's just extreme, and I love it. I just think,
dude, life is so good. I mean,
yeah, it's great.
Could it be better? Like, you know, I'm getting to do what I like to do. It's finally, and it's like, it's my thing. It's our thing. I say my thing, but I'm talking about Mary and I, the family. It's our thing. This is what we always wanted to do. For once in our life, I'm getting to do what I want to do. You know, and who would have known? It was always sitting here in front of me. I was just too scared to go do it. So now I just have to follow through and finish it.
No, you're doing it, man. It's great. Well, listen, thanks for taking the time to, you know, talk a little bit about where you've been and what you're going to do and what your plans are moving forward. Like, the listeners will appreciate it. And yeah, till we speak again.
Yeah, absolutely, man.